Welcome to the Footy Museum and the Footy Museum podcast. I am Justin Witte, co-director of the Footy Museum. Maria Van Dyken Lee, the other co-director, is off traveling the world with her husband Jeremy as they visit family overseas. I'm here with a short pod this week as I catch up with our Turkish Super League fan, Onur Öztürk, who will fill us in on all things happening in Turkey, including the controversial match this past weekend between Fenerbahce and Trabzonspor, in which fans and players faced off on the pitch after the match. So why don't we jump into that interview with Onur? So Onur, it's so great to have you back for an update on what's going on in Turkey. We just wanted to touch base with you because in addition to finding out how your beloved Beşiktaş are doing this year, we also wanted to get your take on some of the high-profile news that's come out of the Turkish League this year, starting with, the Super Cup cancellation in Saudi Arabia, through league suspension, then, and of course, this past weekend's game, the game this weekend between Trabzonspor and Fenerbahce. So first, I want to talk to you about the Super Cup. What is your take on that? I found it actually kind of a uplifting story, actually.
Thank you, Justin. It's always a pleasure talking to you, and hi to your listeners. Super Cup incident was very interesting. This has been already a very tense season between Fenerbahce and Galatasaray. They are very close to each other. And the Super Cup game typically happens much earlier, usually even like the regular season starts. But there has been many attempts for government to have agreements with multiple countries, particularly in the Arabian Peninsula. Yeah. That's another topic for another scholar. But part of that deal also involves Saudi Arabia's attempt to have this series of cultural events. This, to my understanding, the Crown Prince project of opening Saudi Arabia further into the world. So they made an agreement with the Turkish Soccer Federation, TFF, to have the Super Cup game in Saudi Arabia. From the moment it was announced, it was a very hot debate in Turkey. Yeah. And particularly Fenerbahce fans and eventually Galatasaray fans expressed that this is not something they are very comfortable with, because this is one of those cups usually associated with the name of Atatürk, and also it's like one of the most important events, and this being like Fenerbahce and Galatasaray, arguably with the largest number of members supporting these clubs, very contentious. So there was already a lot of tension, and basically what we understand is there was a very extensive contract between the Saudi government and the Turkish Federation, and that involved not to have any quote-unquote political symbols.
Nothing political.
Yes, they wanted nothing political. And I don't know if any of our listeners have been to Turkey, but Mustafa Kemal Atatürk, the founder of modern Turkey, is not necessarily what we would typically consider in Turkey as a political figure. Mm-hmm. It would be like the equivalent of like people would be comfortable having portraits of Lincoln or George Washington.
Large founding figure of the country.
Exactly. Yeah. Such a critical.
Fairly, he's a beloved figure.
Exactly. Right? And part of it is also this kind of little tension between a secular, or at least still on paper, being a secular country versus a country where religion is very much intertwined with a lot of government decisions. So there was definitely that dimension of it. But at the end, what basically caused the whole deal falling apart is some players wanted to wear the t-shirts with the Atatürk portraits, and there were reports of some debate happening with the Turkish national anthem, which Saudi officials said they eventually agreed on. So it was just too complicated, and basically both teams decided not to do it. And it is still not announced. I think they are planning something like in late April for that to happen.
Yeah, it's a shame, especially for all those fans who put in considerable expense to make it to that game. I know that La Liga is also in agreement with Saudi Arabia having major games held there. And of course, Saudi Arabia hosting the uncontested hosts of the 2034 World Cup, and they're, you know, the sport washing going around all of soccer, but behind a lot of their moves is very clear. But I did find that the fan base is kind of unifying over this broader issue of really free speech and identity was kind of a positive story to take out of it. But still kind of shocking to have a game of that level canceled at the last minute. It was pretty wild. But then we go later into the season, and for a period this season, the entire Turkish league was suspended after a president of one of the clubs attacked a referee on the field.
Absolutely. So yes.
Can you tell us about that a little bit more?
Yes. So basically on December 11, at Ankara, my hometown, the president of Ankara Gücü back then, Faruk Koca, at the end of the game decided the result was not fair, and what started as initially an argument turned into an attempt by him to punch the FIFA referee Halil Umut Meler, one of the rising stars of the referee world in Turkey. And obviously, there was a huge backlash to that. And eventually, with the pressure, the president of the Ankara Gücü had to resign. That seemed to calm things down a little bit. And there were multiple investigations about it. But it's unfortunately not the first time that happened. There were in the history of Turkish Super League some attacks to referees and similar events, but it was considered as one of those events like many soccer fans were quite disgusted, to be perfectly honest.
And then what was the take when there was a suspension of play for the whole league? I mean, what was your sense of the fan response to that? Did they feel like that was an overreach?
My understanding, it was actually mostly supportive. I I don't think nobody necessarily thought the entire season would be canceled, but at that point, my feeling was people were supportive for this, and a lot of commentators I listened to said, you know, this is the time for things to change, and this is the moment, right? This kind of expectation that would be when everything starts to change, which is also interesting because I believe Trabzonspor Fenerbahce games referee is also the same referee. We can double check that, but I'm going to do
maybe
it.
Maybe he should just not referee games.
Yes. And there are even rumors, like this is kind of like a bad gossip thing, but there are even rumors that he told some of his close friends that he was not ready for this kind of a very contentious problematic game. But that's what I'm hearing from, like, I am a huge fan of some of those, especially these former Beşiktaş players have some channels, and I listen to some of them. So that may be, yes, I think Meler was actually, Halil Umut Meler was the referee, which makes this interesting in that regard.
So speaking of that game, the Trabzonspor and Fenerbahce game that just happened this past weekend, for our listeners who aren't aware, already a strong, intense rivalry. There was major league implications for the game, which you can explain in a minute. But essentially, Fenerbahce won the game. They were the away team. And they celebrated the victory, as teams often do. And the fans took great offense at that celebration. Now, whether that was the true impetus or whether something would have happened anyway, but there was large-scale storming of the pitch by different supporters who actually then took on players. And there was kind of jarring images of supporters running at players with the corner flags, or one wearing a kind of ridiculous clown face mask, squaring up like a 1920s boxer.
And then got beaten up pretty bad.
Well, they got beaten up bad by the players and coaches who were visibly threatened, you know.
Osayi Samuel is one of those players Just before he start punching that guy, he actually had a knife that he drops. I think
the supporter just, did. Yeah.
Yes, the supporter. So I believe at this point it may be self defense, but that's one of the interesting things, Justin, because so far there's no decisions about the game, about the fence. There, to my understanding, the last time I checked before our interview, 5 fans are arrested. The investigation continues, but from the Turkish Federation, there is no announcement of any like penalties, any kind of fees, anything to specific clubs or players. And I believe this is also intertwined with the upcoming election in Turkey. There's a big election coming next Sunday, and that's one of the biggest races, is the mayoral race in Istanbul. Okay. Is our listeners may know, Istanbul has a population of 20 million. It's basically a smaller version of Turkey. So there are a lot of Trabzon fans. There are a lot of Fenerbahce fans, which is one of the major neighborhoods in Istanbul. And İmamoğlu, the CHP party's leader, who is the current mayor, is also considered potentially a future presidential candidate. Erdogan is not a huge fan of him, kind of sees him as a potential. So there are all these interesting layers of politics, but also...
I'm sorry, but you're saying that they don't want to perhaps not prosecute because they don't want to anger any potential voting base.
Okay. Exactly. That's the understanding. And I think a lot of commentators in Turkey are agreeing with us on that. This is one of those things that is soccer, but that's also about politics, because we know how Turkish fans are so passionate about this. So this can actually potentially influence their decision in that big elections coming next Sunday.
But this is not historically... It's not an entirely isolated event, correct?
Absolutely not. Particularly Trabzon and Fenerbahce has a very complicated recent history. A very close call in 1996, where Trabzon very dramatically lost the championship to Fenerbahce after a home game. And then in 2010-2011, when Fenerbahce won with just 2 points, if I remember correctly, there was a major investigation. And later that investigation turned out to be connected with some of the political complications of Turkey, which is another topic for another podcast. And there was a shooting incident in 2015 to Fenerbahce bus after a Trabzon support game. So there's all these like layers and layers and layers of things. And one of the things soccer experts in Turkey indicate that they feel like there wasn't enough done in each event, including the game that happened last weekend. Because even during the game, there were multiple occasions where the referee could very easily end the game, because there were so many water bottles and fireworks being thrown onto the field. It was definitely much more intense than some of the games I know in the past. They decided to cancel due to the reactions of the fan. So they are basically implying that maybe this is the reason, like they did not want to be in the business of Trabzonspor. Trabzonspor notoriously has many supporters from the government, particularly from the ruling Justice Party, AK Party.
Do you think that also plays into the lack of convictions around this event?
Absolutely. I think that definitely must have played a role in this. There has been criticism about the number of police force that was not present in the stadium, that is usually more in this kind of tense games in Turkey. But you know, some people also criticize Fenerbahce players for celebrating too vibrantly, which is ridiculous to me. Like I don't like Fenerbahce, but I have many Fenerbahce fans in my family. When you win a game like that, I understand.
You
like,
celebrate. And what's the line between too much and too like?
Exactly. This, but I think that's also, there's also another like anthropological dissertation there, because I think as a country, Turkey is going through some very intense period of financial crisis, political divisions. And I think soccer is not immune to that, right? Yes. So it is in this movement.
Well, it distills it maybe in a way even.
Absolutely.
Because you bring everyone together and all of those tensions on top of historical rivalries. And also you have, you know, neighborhoods or regional differences, class differences, often with different clubs.
Absolutely.
And I know that, you know, from the last time we spoke, that how much these things flow through Turkish football and how it's used at different times politically, both by the government, but also those who maybe it's the only platform they have to speak against a dominant rule. But when there are events like this past game that get so much global attention, right, that kind of becomes a story around the league. What is the take? Because you have to assume that the large majority of fans are much like you, your family, other supporters who have a deep connection to these teams, but also are not, do not condone this kind of behavior in any venue, let alone one that's supposed to be the kind of a joyful venue. Yeah. You know what I mean? So what is the feeling among the most of the fan base? And is there any movements among fans to kind of address hooliganism?
Yeah, great question. Absolutely. And, you know, I feel like particularly in Turkey, this idea of national identity is still pretty strong. It just is a example of that, like, you know, despite these very deep rivalries, national soccer team is still considered as one of those teams that can actually unite the people, even though that even that got a little damage in recent years, but that's another topic for another day. But in events like this, I think a majority of soccer fans actually feel pretty terrible about it, because that's not the soccer they want to watch. That's not the conflicts they want to watch on the screen. But also, as you mentioned, that kind of international representation of Turkish soccer bothers many Turks. I know that for a fact, because this is definitely feeding into a problematic representation of also Turkey in general. So they definitely, a lot of people absolutely don't condone that. But we also feel that these kind of events are also reminders that, you know, this is connected to other cultural problems that's happening right now. And maybe a lot of people feel like they can get away with things like this and with a slap on the wrist kind of deal, which actually happened. And that's what we believe may have encouraged this kind of behavior.
Do you feel that there's any, is there a sense that it's kind of, because of the intensity of the game and the moment in the league, you should explain that the table, the top three places were kind of at play in the outcome of this match, right? Because Galatasaray, you had said, had already secured the top spot. And then was this the winner? If Fenerbahce had lost, how would that have affected the table differently?
So we have, I think, only a few games left in the season. We are coming towards the end of it. There's still plenty of games, so it's definitely not certain. But this is one of those seasons where Fenerbahce and Galatasaray are definitely the top two teams, and they are super close to each other. Mm-hmm. There is currently only 2 points in between them. And there is a Galatasaray-Fenerbahce game coming up. So as long as that difference is consistent, you know, nobody can even imagine what that game is gonna look like. And just to give you a little bit of example of how that rivalry is so intense, even in places like Chicago. Chicago has one major Turkish coffee house where everybody goes for those kind of games. I don't go there for Fenerbahce Galatasaray games because I know the owner. I know it gets crazy. I'm like, I'm not going to get into your business. I heard it gets very intense and very crowded and very wild. But I just want to say, you know, this is also part of the layer is as Turkish people, we are a little bit too much into soccer. So that comes into play. But in this season, particularly with Fenerbahce and Galatasaray is super close. And just to give you a little bit of historical background, Fenerbahce has been struggling winning the league, which is kind of a big deal because Galatasaray and Fenerbahce are supposed to be these top contenders. Yeah. But Fenerbahce did not win the league since the 2013-2014 season. And their current president, I think he said this is going to be his final year. Okay. Although, you know, with these events, he has some other plans. Possibly if they don't play for the rest of the league, they may be relegated to the lower league. Then he said he's going to stay for that season. But I think there's a lot of pressure on Fenerbahce, but also Trabzonspor because of all those things I mentioned earlier, but also they want to get the third spot for the European Cups. Yeah. And also they just want to beat Fenerbahce. It's always a big deal for Trabzon because of those historical rivalries and all this complicated stuff, which is, in my opinion, never fully resolved. Like they did not fully resolve the 2010-2011 season. Mm-hmm. There are still Trabzonspor players who always claim they won that season. It's just... It's just one of those. Simmering. Yeah. Trabzonspor won the league in 2022, but that seemed to calm things down a little bit. But then now we have again, once again, this incredibly... And other fans are kind of a little bit sick of it. Like, we want it to be configured because it's getting so intense.
So speaking of other fans, and I know you don't have a ton of time with us, but... You know, our the Footy Museum beloved Turkish team is Beşiktaş, of course. As you see, we have our lovely scarf that you provide us.
Thank you.
Can you give our listeners an update on that season? Because they're also towards the top of the table this year.
Beşiktaş is not doing as good as Beşiktaş fans want. And that's always championship, obviously.
Right.
But they have been into the quarterfinals in the Turkish Cup, which is actually one of the pathways to European Cups. Yes. You can actually go to Europa League. So there is some hope there. And as if anybody is following Fenerbahce, we did get Giovanni De Santos as our coach after four different coaches early in the season. So it was a turmoil. It was a number of different coaches. And I personally think he can potentially bring Beşiktaş where we want it to be. Yeah. But Beşiktaş fans are so impatient. And he's making the team play a more controlled defensive soccer. And that's not sitting very well with some of the Beşiktaş fans who always want Beşiktaş to be in super aggressive, attacking kind of play, like Bayern Leverkusen this year or something like that in terms of nature. So we'll see what happens, but there is some hope. They got some really good players during the January period where they were allowed to transfer players. They got an Albanian player. His name is Muçi. He's actually really good. I think he has a great potential. He plays number 10. They also got a player from Portugal. I'm blanking out his name, but he's a great midfield defensive player. So we'll see what happens. It's going to be an interesting time to see how Beşiktaş evolves and prepares itself for the next season.
It'll be wonderful to see them in the Europa League. I actually am a big fan of Europa League over Champions League, only because as a competition, I find it more engaging. Whereas the Champions League starts to echo more and more top leagues where there's kind of a four or five super clubs, you know, battling it out.
Yeah,
there's less opportunity and chance. And of course, Europa League is ultimately a path to Champions League, but it is still enjoyable to watch. You mentioned, back to the game real quick, you mentioned there's some threat of relegation to these teams involved. Is that what you said? Is that
one of the rumors? I think that's part of the reason why they are not announcing all the penalties and such yet.
I can't imagine that happening.
And that's the interesting thing, because they interview a bunch of fans in Istanbul a few days ago, and even Galatasaray fans don't want that happen because, you know, a league without Fenerbahce-Galatasaray rivalry or Fenerbahce-Beşiktaş rivalry would be pretty bland. The thing is, I think it's pressure by the president of Fenerbahce. His name is Ali Koç, coming from one of the very prominent families of Turkey. And Ali Koç said, you know, he implied that if their players get any, like, you know, long-term suspensions or things like that, which happened in the past, that actually happened to one of the Beşiktaş players, David de Souza, for fighting back to one of those Ankara Gücü fans. I think this happened like 2 years ago. So I think he's implying that if something like that happens, if they suspend Batshuayi or Samuel Osayi for, let's say, 8 games or things like that, like if they try to create a system where they penalize Trabzon, but they also give a lot of punishments to Fenerbahce, he implied that he's not going to let his players appear in the next game, which ultimately may lead to their relegation to the Turkish First League, Birinci League. And that would be unprecedented, because Fenerbahce never played in that lower league, my knowledge, or Galatasaray or Beşiktaş.
I just can't imagine in modern football, when the financial interests that are wrapped up in these clubs, it's like the 110 odd violations charged against Manchester City. I can't imagine them ever being acted on, because that is such an engine, such a product of not only the English Premier League, but of Sky Sports and NBC and, you know, so many large entities. I think it's a weird moment where these clubs are such huge international businesses that like the any threat to them. But then that becomes a problem, is how do you actually fairly police their actions? So it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, and it would be also very interesting to imagine Edin Dzeko in a tiny little Turkish town.
Well, that could be actually, as a fan, that could be really fun, you know?
Yeah, that's also interesting. But I think it's a bluff. It's putting some pressure. But I guess we'll see. That's kind of like part of being, it's fascinating to be a Turkish citizen, because it's never a dull moment in politics or soccer. So who knows what the hell is going to happen. I don't know. Can I say how? But, you know, it's interesting. It's very interesting. But Ali Koç does have a presence in terms of not just soccer, but also because of his family name, because of his reputation. And I think Fenerbahce is definitely a very powerful club. But I absolutely agree with you. If something like that would be very devastating to Fenerbahce, but we'll see. We'll see. I am not sure. And I do think that that's why they keep delaying the decision.
Like, what is the right? There's no no-win situation. Yeah, I would think that the individual fans would be. Well, I understand that the other side said, well, the players also partook in this, but you're on a field surrounded by other fans coming at you. I don't know what you would do differently in that situation. Maybe the severity of some of the beatings they bestowed. Well, and I just want to give a note to fans. If you think it's a good idea to jump on a field to take on a professional athlete in a fight, you're probably going to get your butt kicked.
Yeah, I remember in college.
It's not going to be a fair match.
I remember in college standing next to one of the Beşiktaş players, and I'm like, oh my God, that leg is as thick as my belly.
Yeah. So maybe not the wisest move for a lot of reasons. But speaking of wild footballing situations, because although you are a Turkish citizen, you are a Chicagoland resident.
Absolutely.
And you made it to your first MLS Chicago Fire game. And not only that, it was the crazy 4-3 victory in the wind tunnel that was, I think, the first time in league history.
Yes.
Where a team had come back in regulation from down two goals in the 80th minute. That was a wild game.
The last one was during the extension time, I think, the fourth goal.
Well, no, regulation meaning not an playoff game. So there has not been a regular match in MLS where a team has come back from two goals down after the 80th minute. There have been playoff matches, but then that comeback was in extra or overtime. So, but that was, and then the final game, the game was won where Kellen Acosta, a new Fire player, U.S. men national teams player, was just trying to kick the ball into the box from midfield to hope that it bounced right, maybe landed in front of a Fire player.
Yeah.
But this gust of wind.
Yeah, the Chicago wind.
And it just kind of like, you could see the trajectory of the ball change, and all of a sudden, oh my gosh, the goalie's backpedaling and it just went in the goal. It was the wildest. What is your take? What is your take on the Fire?
It was one of the wildest goals I have ever seen. And I did see some pretty exciting comeback games, but this is definitely one of the best in terms of like this excitement. Like it's almost like too cheesy. Like, you know, like if it was a soccer movie, I would be like, it's just too cheesy.
Where the wind blows the ball.
Absolutely. Like, you know, they are losing 3-1 and everybody's devastating, the team coming together, all that kind of stuff. But yeah,
the two new players scoring pivotal goals, like
Hugo
Kuipers and Kellen Acosta. Yeah.
But I was very happy, and my wife would probably agree with me. This was like kind of like my moment to at least pass a little bit of the soccer virus to my daughters. Oh. As you know, it was the kids' day.
They gave these
lovely bracelets, which I'm stealing one of them for today. And I can say my 7-year-old was not into it, but my 4-year-old Isla absolutely loved it. She was like, let's go. She was like telling players to go and apply pressure. And she was jumping up and down, and she absolutely loved every minute of it. So I was trying to explain my family that this is not something always happens, but we were delighted with my spouse that this turned out
to be a really
exciting game.
At least the last 10 minutes.
Yeah, as a Turkish American, I'm glad I am finally enjoying also MLS a little bit. I have to say that Montreal shouldn't give up. I think Montreal is a good team.
They're very good, some of their
quick attacks. They have good play. I think Chicago Fire should also not too much celebrate. I think it will be a long season, but I do congratulate all the players.
Yeah, I think sometimes luck has to go their way, but they probably definitely stole one there. But we appreciate you coming back on and giving us some insight into another
exciting season. Thank you so much, Justin.
Yeah, and we will keep an eye on the last few games of the season, assuming it happens. I think it will. And then we hope to see Beşiktaş in the Europa League next year.
All right. I hope so, too. Thank you so much.
Okay. Oh, it's always great to speak with owner. He's one of our favorites because he's not only such a big football fan, but he's an art historian. So we connect on a few levels. So best of luck to his Beşiktaş, and I hope things get sorted out in the Turkish League. We'll be back in a couple of weeks as I will also be traveling. So until then, that is the story of football, the soccer kind.